Welcome to the Dynamics of Everyday Life, where we demystify some tricky concepts and get to know ourselves a little bit better. Welcome back to the Dynamics of Everyday Life. Thank you so much to everyone who said that they'd resonated with my last episode, Why Do I Still Feel Like I'm Being Picked Last for PE? It came off the back of some conversations that I'd had with friends, so it absolutely is something that happens in everyday life and affects many of us. Hopefully realising that you're not alone in this and being able to explore it from another perspective has helped the school PE field go back into history where it belongs. Today's topic is another one that comes up several times in my conversations with friends. Oops, I've done it again. Now, fortunately, I'm not going to turn into Britney Spears now. I think my children would never leave the house again for the embarrassment that this would cause them. What I'm thinking about here is that thought we have done something that we swore to ourselves that we wouldn't do again, because it doesn't help us. And yet we find ourselves doing the same thing over and over again. I'm not going to call it a mistake, because we do things for a reason, and it's really important that we remember we do things for a reason. Often it's a need that isn't being met, and we might not know what this need is, but it's incredibly important that we start to think about it, because otherwise we're going to continue with the same behaviour repeatedly. There's a frequently referenced quote from Einstein, who said that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, whilst expecting different results. And we all nod our heads sagely at this and agree with the sentiment. However, it's not enough to look at a quote and think, right, that's going to change me. It's a useful statement, but in all honesty, is reading a quote or looking at a quote going to change our behaviour? No, it's not. It might stay with us or make us think, but it's going to take more than that. We've all been at the point where we think, I am not going to do that again. Or, that didn't have the outcome that I hoped for and I'm disappointed. From there, we believe that just by thinking we aren't going to do something again, that we won't do it again. And that's just not true. To quote one of my favourite songs by one of my favourite groups, never again is what you swore the time before. And that's Policy of Truth by Depeche Mode for anyone who's interested. What we're thinking about here is that it's a need that's not been met. It's a wound that's not been healed. And we're going to keep doing something over and over again until we actually look at what our behaviour is telling us. As I said earlier, I don't want us to see these things as mistakes. We make decisions for the very best of reasons in the moment. Calling something a mistake is not going to be helpful. It's information and data for us. It's a way of understanding ourselves a bit better. So what's happening psychologically here? We've talked about transference before. That's the repetition of primal responses and behaviours towards people and situations that aren't right for the situation now. What we haven't talked about in so much detail so far is the repetition compulsion. So it's time to get into some Freud. Freud is thinking about the idea of repetition almost from the very start of his work. Maybe you've heard the term return of the repressed, and this is something he identified very early on in working with people. He then starts to focus on the concept of the repetition compulsion in his 1914 paper, Remembering, Repeating and Working Through. But it's really his 1920 essay, Beyond the Pleasure Principle, where he expands on the concept at a much greater depth. So what's he saying in this work? We might think that the mind is always moving towards pleasure, but there are many different forces in the mind that cause tension, so what we might consciously feel actually might not be pleasure at all. As well as the pleasure principle, there's also the reality principle, which is the ego's way of self-preservation. We could get quite technical here, but I'll save that for another episode. There's also conflict between the different instincts, and some of these can get repressed because our unconscious doesn't want us to know that we have certain instincts. Maybe they're socially unacceptable, or we have very strong parental or authoritative voices that we have internalised, and therefore our unconscious decides that we shouldn't be wanting what we actually want. So the result can be that we end up not knowing what we really want at all. Remember I talked in one of the first episodes about everything that gets repressed into the unconscious, all the things that we don't want our conscious mind to be aware of. There's a lot of activity going on in there. This leads us into thinking about why we might repeat things that don't bring us any pleasure at all. We repeat things that don't bring us pleasure instead of remembering them, as this is easier for the mind to cope with. So ironically, the pleasure principle is at work here, because we would have unpleasure, as Freud refers to it, if we remembered them. However, the compulsion to repeat, or repetition compulsion, in effect, goes beyond the pleasure principle by overriding it. Freud gives the example of children repeating difficult situations in their play in order to gain mastery over them. When children play with their toys, they have control over what happens to them, as opposed to in life, where they have very little control over situations. So we can understand the compulsion to repeat as a way of us gaining mastery over primal experiences that cause us pain. By repeating the experience, we're trying to find a way to gain control over our circumstances. But the very act of repeating something means that we won't. And this makes me think of the moment in the show Cabaret, where Sally Bowles sings, "Maybe this time." There's the hope that things will be different, which we all have when we're repeating the same behaviour, but then the sadness and desperation is also there too, as things won't be different unless we're able to change. To change, we need to understand what we're doing and why we're doing it. The repetition compulsion can get in the way of us understanding ourselves better, because for the majority of the time, we really don't know that we're in this compulsion. Things that we don't understand come back to us. We can also see patterns of behaviour repeated through families and coming down through the generations. This happens because we learn how to behave and what responses work in our families of origin. People put themselves in familiar situations so that they feel safe and they avoid anxiety. Many different theorists have struggled with the idea of the repetition compulsion and what Freud actually meant, but there's part of me that feels that this is being overcomplicated. For me, the easiest way to understand this, if I'm repeating behaviour that I consciously know won't help me, but I'm being driven towards, is that there's probably a need from way back when that has never been met, and I'm desperately trying to meet that need or heal that primal wound. I'm trying to find a way to do this in the best way that I know how to do, as it's a way that feels known to me. It's not necessarily comfortable, but it's definitely known. Have a think about times when you do things that confuse you because you don't know why you do them. You don't feel great about it, but there's a pushing towards it. That's probably the repetition compulsion in action. And these can be single incidents or prolonged patterns of behaviour over time. To give an example, I'm very lucky with the friends I have now, but I wasn't so lucky when I was at school. It was a time when I was really quite lonely and I felt awkward and unsure of my place, and so would become everyone's agony aunt, as that gave me a purpose and I felt needed. But there were a lot of unconscious forces at work here, repressing what I really felt. As I got older and moved away from school, I found this role hard to put down. My narrative became that to stop feeling lonely and to have friends, I had to play the role of the supporter. Not with all my friends, but there were definitely some key relationships that weren't in my best interests. And this was a way of behaving that carried me through for a long time. It felt normal. It felt it was what I should be doing. But objectively, it didn't really work for me. It was when I became a coach that I had the space to look at what my relationships and friendships were made of, and I realised what I'd been doing. I was driven to repeat some friendships in a certain way to try and stop the initial feeling of being lonely or being a bit awkward. So the awareness gave me the ability to look at my friendships and decide what I wanted and how they were going to look going forward. Does this mean that I've absolutely nailed it in all my friendships and relationships? Not quite. There are times when I probably slip back into old ways, when I'm tired or when my boundaries are a bit blurred. But I do know that when I start to feel resentful or unhappy, that it's time to recalibrate, take responsibility for my friendships and relationships and my place in them. But let's give ourselves some grace. We swore we'd never be in these situations again, but unless we've looked at what's been going on for us, how can we not end up repeating things? Have a think about when you felt cross or frustrated with yourself from repeating a situation or behaviour. Could there have been some aspects of the repetition compulsion creeping in? What's this telling you? What needs might not be being met? What can you do to meet this need in a more helpful way? Now, this is a really big piece of work to do on ourselves, and we won't necessarily be able to break that pattern of behaviour immediately. In the next episode, I'm going to be talking about how we get in our own way by looking in the wrong places to get our needs met. Looking at ourselves at this level can be challenging and unnerving as we develop our awareness, so I'd always encourage that you do this at your own speed. If you feel you need some extra help around this, then I've put together a PDF resource sheet, and you can find the link for this in the show notes. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Dynamics of Everyday Life. Please hit the follow button for future episodes and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow me on Instagram at The Dynamics of Everyday Life or find me on LinkedIn at Julia Rogers. I'd love to hear from you and hear your thoughts on dynamics. The Dynamics of Everyday Life is brought to you by Coaching 42 and the fabulous team at the Podcast Boutique.